Our speaker today is Allie Latimer. She is the General Counsel of the General Services Administration, a native of Pennsylvania and graduate of Hampton Institute, Howard University, and Catholic University. Allie Latimer's experience as lawyer, social worker, were preceded by positions as personnel clerk and realty officer, so there is upward mobility. An ordained elder in the United Presbyterian Church and a member of an extensive list of civic, professional, and religious organizations, her biographical sketch looks like what other organizations, a listing of organizations, and her list of honors looks like something that you usually see a biography of men include, and very seldom a biography of women include. Let's see what she would like to tell us about her position in GSA and how she got there.
Hi. I want to do about two things, well, maybe three, with the questions and answers. I want to tell you a little bit of something about the agency where I work. I want to tell you something about what I do, and then I want to tell you a little something about how I got there. And then I'll open it up for questions. So I'm going to go through that very quickly, because I don't know exactly what it is you are interested in knowing. And so then that way we can get into a full, it's nice for small groups, and then we can sort of just make it very intimate and ask some of the things that are on your mind. So I'll start off by just telling you that something about the agency, and I'll be very quickly with that so that you will, we can get to some of the things that you're probably interested in. I'm really glad to be here at this conference to talk about some of the concerns of women. But I'm going to talk first about GSA, which is the General Services Administration. It's a little-known agency to some of you, and if, for those of you who are in government, it's a well-known agency because they control a lot of the things you do in your day-to-day work. The space, the pencils, anything that goes wrong, blame GSA. However, it's one of the largest independent agencies in the government. It has more than 37,000 employees. Just to give you an example of the size, that's about 5,000 more employees in the State Department. We are often referred to in GSA as the housekeeping arm of the government, but we prefer to call it the business arm of the government. We consider ourselves the business managers. GSA is comprised of about five services. The first service and the largest is the Public Building Service, and they operate the 10,000 government-owned or leased buildings throughout the United States. It also protects the property and the people who use it and dispose of real property determined by other agencies to be of no longer of use. Each year, our Federal Supply Service, FSS as we like to call it, purchases more than $3 billion worth of common commercial items, ranging all the way from paper clips to helicopters, from pencils to dishwashers. These items supply the about 850,000 federal employees with everything they need to perform their daily duties, as I had said earlier. Federal Supply Service, FSS as we call it, also operates the 73,000 motor vehicle interagency motor pool, disposes of excess personal property, and manages the nation's stockpile of strategic materials, which we would need in case we had to fight another war. Our ADTS, Automated Data and Telecommunication Services, manages the largest private telephone line system in the nation. We set policies for the use of computers and aid other agencies in the purchase and management of computers and telephone systems. In this area of mass communication, although this is one of our small services, we consider this is one of the most important ones. Our National Archives and Records Services, NARS as we call it, They are responsible for keeping all the important documents, managing the federal records storage, and offer guidelines on records management to the federal community. Our Federal Preparedness Agency, FPA as it's called, plans for the event that we all pray that will never happen, a national disaster. In a national emergency, whether by accident or by war, it will be the Federal Preparedness Agency, along with the Department of Defense and HUD, who would direct the functions of government and try to keep it running. So you can see that as general counsel of this agency, it's a pretty mishmash conglomerate of business. As general counsel of the agency, with supervision of a team of over 160 lawyers, I'm involved in almost everything from leasing terminology to represent the interests of the federal community in utility rate cases to litigation over the tapes of former President Nixon. My job is like running a very large law firm, except for in most large law firms, you have partners. In this instance, I'm the only partner, or the senior partner, as you would have it. We have 10 divisions in our central office and 10 regional offices all over the country, from Boston to Region 1 to Seattle, Washington, or Auburn, Washington, Region 10. And in each of these regions, we have a chief counsel and a staff, which comes under my jurisdiction. And we also, in the central office, have these 10 services, one of which, at the present time, is our contract compliance. Through the OFCC that you heard Karen Kloss talk about earlier, we are one of the 11 agencies where we are responsible for monitoring the compliance of certain utilities, construction, and other industries. So what does all of this mean for women? Plenty. Until this administration, I'd like to just tell you there were no women who were serving as general counsels of major agencies. Now there are about 6 or 7. I joined the federal service about 20 years ago. There they go with that music again. Ruffles and flourishes, and here comes the bride. They've been doing that for the last 2 hours. I started out in government. My first federal job was through the Department of Justice in the Federal Bureau of Prisons down at Aulis in West Virginia. I had been doing volunteer work with the Quakers up until that time, American Friends Service Committee, and I went to Europe with them with something called QIVS, Quaker International Voluntary Services, where they sent young people over to do some of the things that war had destroyed. When I came back sick, broke, and hungry, without any clothes, because I gave them all away while I was there, I was looking for a job. I had 3 offers, one in New York City, one in West Virginia, and one to teach. I looked at the 3 offers, and I thought that since I wanted to go back to school, I had started some work on a master's in social work, that it would be better for me to go to a small, unknown place, because there I could save lots of money rather than going to New York City with the Y. I found out that wasn't exactly true, because the place was so isolated you had to fly out of there in order to get any kind of recreation at all. But I did manage to save enough money, I thought, after about a year, to go to school. And since I found out later that the money that I had, I wanted to go to the University of Pittsburgh because I was born in that area and I always thought of the University of Pittsburgh as being the ideal school. I found out that the little money I had saved wouldn't even permit me to go there for the first half semester, less known 3 years. So I set my sights differently. And I ran into an old friend who said, "Why don't you try Howard? So it's much cheaper and maybe you can go there, and not only that, maybe you can get a scholarship." And so I was sort of running out of time, but I made a call, and the result was that I was accepted at Howard and started to law school there, and not being sure whether either my money of my mind would last through a whole year, I decided not to resign my job. Not knowing anything about the federal government at that time, I decided to ask for a sabbatical because my mother had been a teacher, and that was all that I knew was about teaching and sabbaticals. They probably didn't know any more than I did. So I was given leave for 6 months and then an extension for 3 more months. It turned out later on to be one of the smartest things I ever did since I ended up staying in the federal service, because not only did that time count, but later on I found out that I was eligible for a back pay claim, and it covered that whole period. So some of the things somehow that you stumble onto are sometimes they come out to be best. After I left finally resigned after my first year in law school, I found out I could survive. You have a period. Women and men coming out of law school have to pass a bar, and that's usually a very traumatic thing. In some states, they only give it once a year. My mother had remarried and moved to North Carolina, and she thought that North Carolina would be a good place for me to take the bar. So down to North Carolina I went, only to be told that I was not a resident of the state, so therefore not eligible to take the bar. Then I got determined, and I went back to school. That's the reason I have a master's in law today, because I went back to school to do all of the things. If you're a non-state student, you have to register within the first 90 days that you're out of school. So I did that and eventually took the bar in North Carolina and passed, because I was a little bit determined. And was working in the meantime as a realty officer with the Department of Air Force in New York. And later on, after that unit decided to move, I decided that by that time I had passed the bar, I'd go back to Washington. And I, as a walk-in, I was very, very, when I was looking for a job, systematic about the thing. I got the telephone book, and I went down every agency, and I just went to every agency, found out where the general counsel's office was, and then I went up and asked for an appointment to see the general counsel. Most times you didn't get anywhere past the first person. But when I was looking for the Interior Department, had never heard of GSA, and went in the wrong building. And so luckily they were getting ready to hire 10 lawyers. They thought that it was during the Republican administration. They thought I had been sent by the Republican National Committee. And they asked, who sent you? And so, had I been sent? And I said, of course. So I was one of the 10 people that was being considered to be hired and was hired at GSA, and stayed there for 19 years, hired as a 7. For those of you who are in government, you know about grades. For those of you who are out of government, this doesn't mean anything. And when I left, I was a 16. I had gotten up to be assistant general counsel of one of the divisions. And leaving GSA, NASAR, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, somebody had given them my name. They were looking for someone over there. And I went over to talk to the man, and he said, well, we have interviewed 40-some people, but I don't think we need to do anything else, and really made an offer right there on the spot. And I said, well, I'm sure you haven't thought about it, and I haven't either, you know, because after being in one place for that long length of time, you don't really just get up and leave overnight. I stayed at NASA for about a year when, lucky for me, this administration has been very conscious of the fact that women, minorities, and young and old people, but people who are prepared, have not been considered in the past in top management jobs and in policymaking jobs. So when the administrator of GSA was looking around for someone to be general counsel, someone had submitted my name to him, and he called me over and asked. And it was a good feeling to be asked, not to seek. And I say that because of the fact that I think women from time to time need to know that there's plenty of room at the top, but you have to know the route to get there. And to me, the route for getting there is to be concerned about yourself, your future, and where you're going. There's no, for those of us in government, we have come to know that there's no, although there's a merit system and there are all these other things, there's no one out there really concerned about you as an individual. You must take upon yourself to do that. All of the things that come out of the Civil Service Commission, come out of other commissions, they are tools there for you to use. You must learn how to use them, where to use them, and when to use them. And that way you can progress yourself. Set goals. Say, where am I going to be 5 years from now? If I am a secretary, what does this agency offer with reference to where it is I want to go? And this is the kind of thing. I think it was very, as I said earlier, very significant that in this administration, for the first time, we've had women as general counsels of major agencies. This has been predominantly a white male bastion. Women have not been general counsels. I am the first black woman to be appointed a general counsel of a major agency. That is also significant. One of the things that you find in all of the agencies that they lean very heavily on the lawyers. The lawyers are involved in everything. So, therefore, they tend to not think about women. But women make very good lawyers because they're accustomed to dealing with details. They're accustomed to being concerned and doing several things and being several places at one time. So it's not unusual for a woman to get into a job like this and then be able to perform. I just want to add a couple of other things before I close, and then we can get into some discussion about what it is you want to. I noticed in the plan of action, and for those of you who are not federal women and who are in the private sector, or those of you who might be concerned about your own businesses, that there is one issue in the plan of action, the third one, dealing with business. And GSA is mentioned there. However, I don't think this really goes far enough in the sense that it talks about women entrepreneurs. Assuming that there are enough women entrepreneurs out there dealing in the kinds of businesses that the government would be procuring items from. For women who, a lot of the women who are in business are in sort of service-oriented type business consultants. The government does use a lot of consultants, but the backbone, most of the dollars that are spent, these dollars are spent for hard items, for all kinds of things. So it's not just enough to say that we must deal with the women entrepreneurs. We have to help make women entrepreneurs. In our federal women's program at GSA a couple of years ago, we did a survey, and as a part of our program, we had a seminar for women who are in business, trying to find out who these women are, where they are, and what they have to offer with reference to the kinds of items that we buy. So I did want to get that in because it's not just enough to say that the president should direct the General Services Administration to include women in the federal procurement regulations. We got to make sure that there are some women out there who can be providing some of the services and some of the goods that are procured. So as you've heard me say that women now today are not only getting jobs, as I have just mentioned, because this is my main interest as general counsels in GSA, but there have been other women who have been appointed in this administration. In our own agency, we have a woman who's director of administration, a woman who's director of our public affairs office, and this is the trend that has been set in this administration, and it seems to be catching on. This is not to say that women are getting everything in government that they should have or that they have worked for. But I am proud to add to this that we do see more women on the scene in Washington now than we've ever seen before in certain jobs. It's always interesting to go into a job and they say, recently I went to, and they knew that the general counsel was there, but because my name is Allie, which could be either a boy's or a girl's name, they were looking for a male. And so they said that they were waiting on the general counsel from GSA. And I said, well, I am the general counsel from GSA. And the man said, the general counsel? And I said, yes, the general counsel, because he was expecting a man. But we do see more and more women, and I'm always glad to go to meetings where I do see other women who are there and who are participating, because this is where a lot of policies are made. I was recently talking, we were working on the regulations for government buildings. You have to post these in all the government buildings all over the country. And we had always had something in there that the buildings must be used on the basis of non-discrimination. And in the new regulations, someone had removed that. And I said, why? And they said, well, since these was published years and years and years ago, we have both the Civil Rights Act and we have the executive orders, so we no longer need to put it in the regulations. And I said, oh, but you do. I said, if you remove them, you'll have much, much more to explain. Plus, there are lots of people that have never heard about the Civil Rights Act who will be coming into buildings or who have never heard about the executive order. So it's this kind of thing that if you're just there, you can make sure that some of these things don't happen or in other instances do happen. I'd like to tell you, in closing, I'd like to just mention a couple of programs that I think you might be interested in as women and others, because you're mainly humanitarians. And one is a program that we're doing now to retrofit all of our buildings so they are accessible to the handicapped. For years, this important segment of our society has been forced to regard federal buildings and many public buildings as living tombs, almost completely inaccessible. It did no good to talk of hiring the handicapped because he or she couldn't eat in the lunchroom, wash at the wash basins in the restroom, use the restroom, or even drink from the water fountain. It's the goal of Mr. Solomon, our administrator, and indeed he has promised the president that by 1979, all of our federal buildings will be barrier-free and can be used by the handicapped. Another program that I think you might be interested in is called our Art and Architecture Program. It allows us to commission works of art to be placed in public areas of new buildings or older buildings which have undergone major alterations. Some of these artworks are attracting widespread attention, which is what they were meant to do, to draw people into the buildings. This leads to the final thing I wanted to tell you about it. And that is our living buildings.